Wayne Incorporated, hostile takeover. Superman's grounded, waiting for the order. Rex, man, two from the mic, I'm Casanova. Cause now that Chris and Matt are back to bring the pain. This the podcast you play when you're waiting for the train. When you're walking to the store, when you're killing time at work. It's a show that'll destroy the whole universe. So awesome, watch as I spit Jay Ferocious. Two hosts with the most, and I'm Adam Warrock. Whether Marvel or DC, hip-hop or rap, it's like KRS-One's Return of the Boom Bap. Never out of style, and we're coming on strong. Even though every episode's a bit too long. If Flash Gordon dies before I wake, then the cops will probably say it was W.R.A.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, the comic book and pop culture podcast, where I usually have something funny to say at this point, but this week I don't, so deal with that. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Matt Wilson.
I think it is really indicative of my sense of humor that the time that you said you didn't have anything funny to say for the intro, I laughed the hardest.
Yeah, I know. Thanks for that. You know, here's the thing: is I was gonna say that we're heroes on the half shell, but then halfway through getting ready to say that, I was like, "That is the worst, the dumbest reference you could make."
The funniest comedy to me is anti-comedy, which we talked all about that several weeks ago, so I won't get into that anymore. But anyway.
And I did not take an easy jab at your comedy writing when you said it either. Or did I? I don't remember. I probably did. I'm a jerk.
Whatever. Anyway, I'm doing fine, Chris. How are you, Chris Sims of ComicsAlliance.com and the-ISB.com?
I am good. I am excited about our show this week. We have a great show for all of our listeners. We have coming up an interview with Mr. Jonathan Hickman, the fast rising superstar of Marvel Comics, the writer of FF, among other things. And we also have the return, after a couple weeks of not being able to line up schedules, of a Hundo Club member. So please introduce yourself to the people, Luke Hare.
Hey, I'm Luke Hare, and I'm the guest for this week.
Now, Luke, in our pre-show chat, you mentioned that you work at a comic book store.
Yeah, I work at a local comic shop in Pittsburgh, in addition to being a web design student and the Let's Be Friends Again intern.
Oh!
And what do your responsibilities as Let's Be Friends Again intern entail?
Well, obviously, he carries the bag of salt.
Yeah, and beyond
new
that,
listeners,
I can't
go back in the archives. You'll get that one eventually.
Yeah, and besides that, I can't say much, though I can hint heavily that the cannibalism is real.
When will the police stop Kurt Franklin is what I want to know. Quick question about your comic book store that you work at, Luke. Yeah. Does it have a life-size Spider-Man?
It did, but it still does have a life-size Hulk.
Wow, that's... Now, for a while there, I thought that, you know, comic book stores just were issued life-size Spider-Man statues. I think every comic book store I've ever been in had one. And the one that I used to work at actually had a custom-made one that was bolted to the ceiling. And then when we moved locations, was the bolted to the wall and then complemented with a life-size Batman, which was actually really awesome. His eyes lit up. It was great. Next time you go to an unfamiliar comic book store, look around. You will see a life-size Spider-Man.
Words to live by.
Indeed.
But Luke, thanks so much for coming on and for your donation, and we hope you have a lot of fun. While we are in the process of moving things along, though, let's make some checks. Let's check ourselves.
Let's do it.
Let's cash some checks. Luke, since you are our third chair this week, we will ask you first, what's going on with you?
I've just got done with midterm online classes for my spring quarter, so I've suddenly had a bunch of free time to get to read comics and to hang out with people again, which has been really, really nice.
Oh, no. So you actually got to be social for the first time in a while.
Yeah, and as a web design student, that does not happen all that much.
Now, I'm getting up in the years, and it shows on every line etched into my face. But when I was in college, before I dropped out to work at a comic book store, in the smartest move of my life, probably super smart, I took a computer science class so that I would not have to take a math class. Like, because I was an English major, my entire math credit came from two computer science classes. And one of them was, this was the entire class, Computer Science 101 at the time, was here's how to use Microsoft Word. The other, like, that was the entirety of the class. The other one was a basic web design, like HTML, which I had known for years because of my desire to format my posts in the online wrestling role-playing games that I used to play on message boards. So what is involved currently in a web design midterm?
Actually, my midterm was on pop culture history.
Oh.
Yeah. Have to take the non-required classes as well. But most of the big projects for web design are learning how to code in a certain language or having a project made with certain specifications, like learning new ways of putting things together, like digital image galleries or ways to play music and video. Stuff like that.
Like useful things.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one quick question. When I was in this class, one of our like pretty intense assignments was that we were given a picture of a web page, and then we had to recreate that web page. And it was just, you know, I think it had tables involved and some headline-sized fonts. But it was for, it was like ostensibly a page advertising a children's party clown named Chester the Jester. And it came with a picture that you had to, you know, write an image tag for that was the creepiest clown I have ever seen. Is this still in use at all?
Luckily not.
Oh, thank God. That guy was terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, there's one person listening to the show who's like, yes, Chester the Jester, terrifying.
And they're going to have night terrors for the next month.
I thought I was done with that in 2002. Now I'm terrified all over again.
Chris, what's going on with you this week other than memories of horrifying clowns?
I have discovered the human condition. Matt, I have a fragile man. I have a book signing coming up. We're recording this on Thursday, as we usually do. If you're in Florence, South Carolina, then I guess you missed it if you didn't come out on Saturday. Dr. K and I, friend of the show, had a book signing at the Florence Barnes & Noble at Magnolia Mall. So I'm getting ready for this week. And so, like, I wanted to, you know, avoid any embarrassing facial situations because I'm 28 years old and still have acne, which, like, you know, when I was like 13, 14, I thought there would come a time when I would be done with it. There is not. I don't know how this happens. So I, like, you know, I was in the shower the other day and I was like really scrubbing my face and I was using I have one of those loofahs that has like the kind of loofah, the puffy loofah on one side and then like a sort of scrubber on the other side. And so I, you know, took the scrubber side to my face and just stripped off a line of skin from my nose. So it's like that scene in Inglourious Basterds where she's putting on her makeup and she kind of puts it on like war paint first. Just this red line straight down my nose. That I got from trying to wash myself. That is like that. For any of you wondering what happens when you work on the internet all day, that is how weak you become.
Your skin just peels off. It's like you're a leper.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, I think you were on the show in the winter when, like, I went outside for 5 minutes and caught a chill and was, like, all sniffly and miserable for a week. It's like that. Like, I am... If I was a caveman, I would be dead, like, 10 years ago. I'm no Robert E. Howard. That's for GD, sure. So yeah, that's what happened to me. I'm confronting my own mortality. what's up with you?
Well, as I said on the show a few weeks ago, I have sold my car and I have lived for almost 2 weeks now, car free. And I got to tell you, it's a pretty good feeling. I took my car.
Do you just watch news reports about gas prices and laugh?
It's like in that Simpsons episode where Homer gets like super super overweight to go on disability, and he has that like dream sequence about all the people like driving on the rat race, and he's just lounging and. It's like that, except I don't wear a muumuu. But anyway,
yet, you're early in the not owning a car period. You may get one eventually.
It's true. Anyway, I drove my car to CarMax, which I realized when I was taking my car to sell it at CarMax that it is the GameStop of cars.
Are they always trying to sell you those like self-repair guides when you're trying to leave?
I don't doubt it. If you buy a car there, if you sell a car, it's not like that. But anyway, it took me a really, really long time to actually get my car to CarMax. Not because it was a long distance to drive there or I got stuck in traffic or anything, but because I felt it really, really important to wash my car and to inflate a tire. And it was insanely difficult to find a car wash and a place to put air in my tire. I spent probably like 45 minutes looking for these two things. When I got to a car wash, I realized they were definitely only going to take quarters because it was one of those like do-it-yourself car washes. I didn't have any quarters and I didn't have any dollar bills, so I had to go find a place to change a 20 to get some dollar bills to go back to the car wash, which was a gas station. And when I got to the gas station, I just finally decided to go through the automatic car wash at the gas station. But after all that, I got to take my car to CarMax and sell it and ride a train back home. And interesting note, I mentioned previously that the issue of Alpha Flight number 1 that had been in my car for many years that my friend Sean Gerard had given me, and I didn't know what I was going to do with it because it had been in my car for so long. It was not in there when I cleaned it out. And a friend of mine, Ben Gully, who is also a friend of Sean's, came up with the idea that the comic actually like got out and left and went on to the next person it's going to help.
Yeah, it's like Artie, the strongest man in the world. Yes. Know, there's that one episode where he has to leave little Pete because somewhere there out there there's a kid that needs him.
Yes.
Somewhere out there is a too cool guy who needs something goofy to keep in his car.
There's a car that needed an Alpha Flight number 1 and it's in there now. But anyway, now that we have checked ourselves, let's make some recommendations. Luke, what do you have to recommend this week?
About a year and a half ago, when I moved into the apartment that I'm living in now, I ended up pre-ordering a webcomic collection of the comic Dead Winter by Dave Shabbat. And finally, a year and a half later or so, I actually got the book in this week, and as far as independently published webcomic collections go, this has to be one of the best ones that I've actually seen. It's really well put together, the illustrations look great, and it is definitely worth the price that I had to pay for it.
That's not a comic I read, but it does sound pretty familiar. What's the premise of it?
It's a yet another zombie apocalypse story, but it's based around four characters. Liz, who is a maid, or a waitress. And basically her attempts to survive the zombie apocalypse, but it focuses really well on characters and reads somewhat like a good Romero zombie movie.
I will, like I said, I'm pretty sure that I've heard some really good stuff about it. Does the collection have any, like, bonus stuff, or is it just strips?
It does have a lot of additional art in the back, and it's one of those really tall formatted comics, and, like, the book actually does a really good job printing out the comics in that tall format, and it is just a marvelous book.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Chris, what do you have to recommend?
Well, Matt, neither you nor I have gotten, in an unexpected move, I'm sure, for our listeners, another one of us has gotten L.A. Noire.
We both have it on the way, and yeah. We'll probably talk about it next week.
My copy is actually set to arrive tomorrow, and I'm sure we will be talking about it on next week's program. David Uzumeri described it as being a combination of Batman and Phoenix Wright. And that sounds like the best thing ever for me. So I'm really looking forward to it. But in lieu of that, a pretty strange recommendation this week, something that I ended up talking about unexpectedly with Jen Vaughn last night. Jen, by the way, is very close to completing the War Rocket Ajax incentive art that will be going out to all of our donors. I can't wait for you guys to see it. She's painting it now. But for some reason, I have no idea how it came up. For some reason, I started talking to her about My Two Dads, the 1988 to 1990 sitcom starring Paul Reiser and Greg Evigan of BJ and the Bear fame in the title roles. Are you guys familiar with this show?
Yes, I recall it being on in the afternoon on USA every
day. That's right, on the USA Network. Luke, have you ever seen it?
Sorry, Grandpa, I've never heard of it.
Okay, then I'm about to blow your mind. Here's the premise of this show. This girl, her mother dies. She has no idea who her father is, but it's one of two guys who used to be romantic rivals for her mother's affections. She apparently had sex with both of them at or around the same time. They have not seen each other for 15 years until the woman dies. She has it in her will that the daughter must be raised by both of them at the same time. Here's the thing. That is the ultimate dick move. Because otherwise, like, and the guy says, like, Paul Reiser's character in the pilot says, "What if we don't do this?" And the judge, who was a member of the core cast, tells them that she will be remanded to the state adoption agency, which she describes as being Dickensian. How is any of this even in TV logic, how is any of this remotely legal? where these guys who have not seen each other for 15 years and do not live together need to move into with each other and raise this girl, or she will be sent to a horrible, like horrible orphanage. That's asking a lot.
Indeed. I don't have anything to say about it.
it is completely insane in every way. And one of the things, like, one of the worst tragedies of the internet is that the list of My Two Dads episodes on Wikipedia is accurate. Because someone went in at some point in the past and wrote fake episode summaries for increasingly insane episodes of My Two Dads that were unfortunately corrected by an editor. But yeah, like, why would you do that? Why would you just not pick one. Why would you force, like, you know, why would you ruin two guys' lives, I guess is what I'm asking.
Because she clearly loved them both and also really hated them both.
Yeah, like, it seems like this big, elaborate revenge thing. Like, in the last episode, she should have come back.
Yeah. Or perhaps she was secretly a sitcom writer and thought that that would be a great premise for a sitcom.
Maybe so. Yeah. It did run for 3 years and was voted most promising sitcom in 1989.
There you go.
So, also, there was an incredible... Matt, do you remember the purple car-shaped couch that Greg Evigan had in his house?
Vaguely. I remember very little about that show, I must admit.
Yeah, he's like an artist or something. And, I mean, this is... Guys, I don't know if I made this clear. These two guys are different, okay? The one guy wears jeans. All right, the other guy, necktie. Come on. Businessman, and then a guy who's not a businessman? Come on.
Different worlds.
Different worlds, man.
Couples.
But he had a 30s style car that was a couch. So it was like a fuzzy sort of felt 30s style car, like windshield and hood that was also a couch. I wanted that thing so friggin' bad when I was 7. Anyway, My Two Dads. Check it out. It's on YouTube. Recommendation. Deal with that.
Oh, man.
Matt, how about you? What do you have that could possibly follow up My Two Dads? And I want to say, when I was describing this to Jen last night, I was crying, laughing, just thinking about the premise of the show.
I'm not even going to attempt to top My Two Dads as a recommendation. Instead, I'm going to recommend a video game that is not L.A. Noire, but that is available in the Xbox Live Arcade. It is called Moondiver. And it was recommended to a friend of the show and our mutual friend Chris, Andrew Weiss,
yes,
who described this game as basically Strider meets Castle Crashers. And the only real Castle Crashers aspect of it is that it's multiplayer up to 4 players at once, sort of collaborative gameplay, co-op. In every other way, it is almost exactly like Strider, including difficulty.
Oh.
It is like Genesis era tough. And it's also, much like Strider, one of the most Japanese games I have ever played. It has a very ill-defined villain who just announces at the very beginning of the game that he wants to kill everybody. And they're sort of manga style drawings of the various characters in between the different chapters, and it's a crazy game and can be pretty frustrating, even though you do at least level up. So as you continue dying and dying and dying as you're doing the various levels, you are at least getting a little bit better incrementally. But I have had a lot of fun with it, and it is kind of a neat throwback sort of game. So anybody who likes Strider on the Genesis, however long ago, you'll probably like this game too. So, all right, now that we have made it impossible to top something like recommended My Two Dads.
Oh, well, I also feel that we should point out that if you are listening to this show, the rapture did not happen.
That's true.
But it is guaranteed, according to a billboard in Columbia, South Carolina that I saw.
And buses here in Chicago, and a guy I saw standing outside of my office this week.
Yeah. So we have no show planned for next week.
Yeah, I mean, why even bother?
We will be interviewing the Antichrist on next week's show, who will have dominance over the Earth.
Of course.
But yeah.
This week, while we're all still on Earth, let's talk about some comics. Luke, what did you read this week that you think is worth noting?
Herc by Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente continues to be one of my favorite comics week after week. I'm not sure if you guys are reading that.
Yeah, I am. I have not read number three yet. Did number three come out this week?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, I have not read that one yet.
And it's been consistently really great. It's a good mix of action and comedy, just like the Incredible Hercules series that they have been doing had been, if not better. And this week, it dealt with the whole Fear Itself tie-in, and it did it in a really, really good way. And I can't wait for the next issue.
Yeah, I have not read number three yet, but I have been keeping up with the series. I loved Incredible Hercules. You know, obviously, if you're a listener of the show, you know that we love Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente. And there's that that great panel in number two, right after Herc beats the Hobgoblin, where he sort of grabs the girl and holds up his sword and kills, "People of Brooklyn, lend me your ears," which is really, really fun. Yeah, it's been a fun book, and you know, for it to be such a huge gear shift from the sort of epic mythology that they had in the in Incredible Hercules, to sort of, you know, the toned down mortal Herc who has all his magic sword and bow and arrows, basically Link from Legend of Zelda, to sort of tone it down to that and still have it be as good is really a testament to how good those guys are with this character. And I'm glad it's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we should say that those dudes had Alpha Flight this week as well, which I have not read, but I did pick up.
Neither have I. I haven't gotten to read it.
Well, a book that I wanted to talk about is the only one I've actually gotten around to reading so far this week, and that is Gates of Gotham.
Yeah.
By Scott Snyder. And, you know, I was reading and I was chugging along and I was like, oh, I'm liking this, a little bit of history of Gotham, more Scott Snyder, Dick Grayson as Batman comics. Great.
I think I know where this is going.
And I get to the last page and I go, ah. Like, that was the actual sound I made. I just went, ah.
I did the exact same thing.
I really don't know what. Even Scott Snyder, as much as I love the guy and I love what he's doing on Detective, I really don't know how he can do this, how he can pull this out. Should we give it away, Chris?
Yeah, it's got Hush in it.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I don't understand about Hush. Why does he wear bandages on his face? I know that at one point he gave himself plastic surgery to look just like Bruce Wayne, which is not the most ridiculous medical thing he has done, amazingly. But why, like, did he get his face re-messed up? Is he Batman's Jigsaw at this point?
I feel like it's just, when he first appeared, he had a bunch of bandages on his face, and now that's how he has to look.
Yeah. Weird. Now, I gotta say, I think Hush is like the 2000s version of Bane, where, you know, he's what my pal Chag calls a prefab villain. You know, he's a villain created to be a story in a story that is about that villain. You know, like Doomsday or Bane. Like, you know, that villain's existence is the point of the story. And you know he's a big deal because they basically go, this guy's a big deal. I don't think it's impossible to do a good story with Hush. I think it is extremely difficult and has never happened.
Yeah. I just
but you know,
I have so much hope for you, Scott Snyder. I hope beyond hope that you can make this work.
I think if anybody can pull it off, you know, he's got a very interesting premise that sort of plays with the idea of you know, Tommy Elliott as this, you know, member of this rich Gotham City family, as opposed to just the weird, you know, completely nonsensical villain that he is. I like that Cassandra Cain has come back and, according to interviews, is going to be very heavily involved in this story. And I like, you know, I like that there's a mystery about who the fourth, you know, sort of the fourth founding family of Gotham City is. But I think it almost has to be the Cains, the K-A-N-E Cains. You know, Kathy and Kate, the two Batwomen, as well as Batman's mother. If it's not them, that will be shocking. But David Uzumeri and I were talking about how, since Cassandra Cain was raised by David Cain, C-A-I-N, that maybe Snyder is going to sort of tie that back into the K-A-N-E Cain family, which I think would be really cool. Especially with, you know, the Cain family sort of being the source of all Batgirls except for Barbara Gordon. I think that would be, you know, really kind of fun to sort of tie her back into a more central role in the Batman books. And again, everything up to Tommy Elliott showing up is great.
Yeah, exactly.
But it really is, like, when I read a comic and Hush shows up on the last page, it is really like somebody cut a fart and left the room. Like, you know, not to be crude, I just, you know, I hate that guy.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to the rest of the story. I hope Snyder can do something good with it. And considering how good he's been on Detective and how good the rest of this issue is, I have no doubt that he's capable of pulling it off, and I hope he does. Also, No Man's Land got a mention in this comic.
I was a little, you know, it showed, you know, the first part of the book is a flashback to when those bridges were originally built, and it then shifts to the present. In the flashback, Gotham looks similar to how it does in the present, and the first thing that kind of popped into my head was, wasn't there an earthquake? But then it gets a mention, so I'll let that slide.
You know about a Destroyer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where the guy blows up all the buildings so that Gotham City can look more evil.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great premise for a comic. I'm not even kidding. A crazy guy blowing up Gotham so that it looks, you know, evil is great. That was really what I wanted to talk about this week, Gates of Gotham. I think it's, I like that it's very much a sort of, you know, classic style Batman story as well, with, you know, it definitely echoes the original Joker story in that it has that, you know, that huge crazy crime of, you know, the bridges blowing up, and then there's that weird note left. Which is very much a, you know, a superhero trope, but it's one that we haven't seen in a Batman book. You know, it's kind of a simple, fun throwback that we haven't seen in a Batman book for several years.
Yeah.
That I like. I like stuff like that. And again, I think Snyder has been awesome on Detective. Another thing that I read this week was Rocketeer Adventures, which was a real kind of surprising treat. I wasn't planning on picking it up, but then I'd heard some good things about it, and you know, flipping through it, it's got a story with art by John Cassidy, it's got a story with art by Mike Allred, it's got a story with art by Jim Silk, and any time that you get to see Jim Silk draw a girl who looks just like Betty Page is a good time. And it is like a really kind of fun little anthology of short Rocketeer adventure stories, and Cassidy's actually he wrote and drew, and it's like really, you know, kind of sharp and funny and really well done, and I think it's the first thing I've seen him write, and it's got the Rocketeer in it, and the Rocketeer is awesome. He's a dude in a jetpack with a crazy helmet.
Yeah, how can you go wrong?
I'm a big fan of Dave Stevens' original Rocketeer, which, if anyone hasn't read it, is maybe the most gorgeous comic ever produced, especially under Laura Martin's recoloring in the big hardcover edition, who was picked by Dave Stevens, who, you know, obviously was limited by coloring in the 80s. And it's, you know, it's kind of a really solid, fun look at those at those characters. You know, there's, you know, it is not world changing, but it is still an excellent example of comics.
Yeah. One other comic I wanted to bring up, but we can talk about very briefly because we talk about it a lot. And that is not Spider-Man. It is Punisher Max, which actually didn't come out this week, but I just read the most recent issue this week. And Jason Aaron, still doing a great job on that book.
Yep.
That's pretty much all we need to say. There are some really cool parallels, and you have to give this just as much to Steve Dillon as you do to Jason Aaron. Some really cool parallels between Frank Castle in prison and Frank Castle as a young man having just gotten back home from Vietnam. It's just really, really beautifully done. So. Yeah,
and you'd think it would be, like, that could easily be terrible. Because, you know, it's such an obvious thing where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, he sees the real world as a prison. But Aaron is able to pull it off in such a way that it's actually, like, you know, it's constant, but it doesn't hammer, you know? It just, you know, really kind of makes sense and is done well. Rather than just, you know, beating you over the head with it, which I think would have been really, really easy to do in this book. But yeah, it's really good stuff. Two more things that I want to give a quick mention to. Amazing Spider-Man came out, which we always talk about, had the Psycho Man in it.
Yep. Not written by Dan Slott, the first fill-in issue since he became the full-time writer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, wow, I didn't even realize that it was, but yeah, it's Christos Gage on this one, which makes sense that he would tie it into Avengers Academy. But yeah, did really good stuff, and the Psycho Man and his magic iPad is fantastic. There's also a really cool backup story by Paul Benjamin and Javier Pulido that looks absolutely gorgeous and also has the Psycho Man in it. Which I thought was hilarious. But yeah, you know, we've talked about Javier Pulido before. You know, if you like Marcos Martin, which you should, then you will also probably enjoy Javier Pulido's art. Also, Boom put out a $15 Walt Disney Treasury of Don Rosa Donald Duck stories that is really excellent. And it sort of chronologically collects Don Rosa's Donald Duck stories from, I think, 1987 to 1990, including putting one that was never actually published into its chronological order, which was really cool of them. And Boom let us put that unfinished story up at Comics Alliance. So you can definitely check that out. And if you get a chance, definitely check out the Walt Disney Treasury Donald Duck Volume 1, because those stories are amazing. And that's all I got for comics.
All right. Well, then we will move into our interview with Jonathan Hickman. Luke, hold tight, and we'll be back with you after our interview.
Have fun.
Joining us for this week's program is a comic book creator that we have been wanting to get on the show for a long time. Finally, the schedules aligned and we were able to get him. He is the creator of The Nightly News, Transhuman for Image, S.H.I.E.L.D., writer of S.H.I.E.L.D., writer of Secret Warriors, writer of Fantastic Four, and now FF for Marvel, Mr. Jonathan Hickman. Jonathan, welcome to the show, man.
All right, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Now, I wanna get this out of the way early, because I have a lot of questions.
I've got some funny cell phone pictures of you and I, and I don't want them getting out.
I do have questions about conventions later on, but it is one of the recurring themes on our show that we get people who have these incredibly fascinating bodies of work, these really fascinating creative processes, and we don't talk to them about that stuff at all until we talk about food. So my question is, you are a fellow Carolinian.
That's true. Yeah.
So where do you stand on the barbecue issue? Are you a mustard based man? Are you a North Carolina style man?
You're asking me mustard or vinegar? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah. That's what I'm getting at.
I'll be honest with you. It depends what time of year it is and what kind of mood I'm in. But believe it or not, I'm a little partial to the vinegar.
Yeah. Score one for Wilson.
No. I stand alone in my family in that. But it's so I'm an outlier of the Hickman clan, but yeah, I like the vinegar. So.
You don't often hear people talking about barbecue preference in terms of mood, especially in the Carolinas. It's usually all one or all the other. Your stance is not quite as adamant as many other Carolinians.
Well, I'm a world traveler now. And my palate has expanded, and I don't know. I'm just it's usually pretty good. The people that I go to eat with, and the barbecue that I have, it's all pretty damn good. So yeah, it's not like there's one joint in outside of Pittsburgh that we have to fight to get to, you know, or something like that. The choices and the quality are pretty numerous.
You did mention you're a world traveler. I know that before we started recording, you talked about just getting back from a retreat in Portland with some of the other Marvel guys. And I had the kind of funny experience of going to New York City and being treated to Carolina style barbecue. Have you ever been somewhere and gotten barbecue and it's just been wrong? It's just been off.
Yeah, of course. I mean, most of the places I am treated to barbecue outside of the Carolinas kind of sucks. But I will say this: there was a place right across from the hotel where they put me and Jason Aaron and a couple other Marvel guys up last time we were in New York, and Jason ate there and said it was pretty sturdy stuff. He said it was pretty solid. But you know, I was in New York and I wanted to eat other stuff while I was there, so I did not frequent it. But he swore by it.
It's so weird. Both times that I've been to New York, I've ended up eating barbecue or going to a place that served me General Lee's chicken fried steak that I felt like I had to eat. To just see how it was done up there. I know that's out of the way. We can talk comics.
Yeah, I think you're doing it wrong. I would stop eating the barbecue in New York. They got lots of other good stuff, man.
I went out the first time. I went out with a group, and that's where everybody wanted to go. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And the second time, again, I was taken out.
You need a better class of friends then.
I say that so often. With that, I think we can safely move over to your comics work. I've been really I've been a fan of yours since Nightly News came out. Actually, since I saw the big preview in previews, which I at first thought looked insane. But then I realized that what I was looking at was four pages and not two, because they had,
right,
I think,
yeah,
they had two shrunk down double page spreads, so you could kind of get the full effect. And I was like, "What is this?" And then I realized what was going on. I was like, "Oh, that looks really awesome." And that was when did Nightly News come out?
No, November of 2006, I think.
So that was not too terribly long ago.
Yeah, it's been 5 years.
Yeah, and you, in that time, you've moved from, you know, doing creator-owned projects, which you're still doing. I do want to talk about Red Wing in a little bit, to writing the comic that, you know, started the Marvel Universe, which, you know, seems like a big leap, and one that, you know, obviously, I'm a big fan. I think you deserve every bit of it. But was it overwhelming at all to kind of, you know, have a career that took off so much?
Well, I was gambling, so I needed it to pay off sooner rather than later. So that was good. You know, we were living off of our savings because I pretty much just quit my job whenever I got my Image deal. So it was good that it happened that quickly. But I mean, I had advocates. Brian Bendis really liked Nightly News, and certainly a bunch of editors over at Marvel liked that stuff. And I think I got a couple chances, and I did some smaller books, which is the way that you have to kind of get in over there. I did that that Bobby and Sam Go to Mojo World thing, which was a lot of fun. And
yeah,
you
did that. Nicantu the Living Mummy story.
That's right. Yeah, that was kind of fun. Yeah, that was cool. That was cool.
I got a sketch from Heroes Con.
Yep. Yeah, that was the job that made Marvel positive that they never wanted me to draw anything. anyway. But I got a couple of shots to do stuff, and I did fairly well on that. And then Brian wanted to co-write Secret Warriors with me because he was so busy, and then I took that over really quickly. And you know, you only have a chance to impress people, you know, once, really. And so I think I knocked that Secret Warrior stuff out of the park pretty early on, and that got me a chance at the FF gig, and I turned in a pretty impressive document that was going to, you know, talk about everything I was going to do. And you know, since then it's yeah, but been just doing the job and trying to do it as well as I can, and not losing sight of the fact that I'm, you know, I've made it or some other bullshit like that, and just working hard.
Jonathan, while we're on the topic of sort of the Nightly News, that is a very design-heavy book, and you've actually managed to get some of your design work. You talked about Marvel not letting you draw anything, but some of your design stuff has gotten into, you know, Secret Warriors and some of the other books you've done. You know, how did you manage that? Is it because they picked up on the design stuff in Nightly News and liked it a lot, or how did you kind of work that out? Because I know the big publishers like to do a lot of design stuff in house.
Well, they still do. I mean, the vast majority of everything at Marvel gets done in-house. But when I turned in my plan for Secret Warriors, a lot of it was all these cool graphs and character charts and all this kind of stuff that they hadn't really seen that much of from anyone. It kind of, Joe Quesada kind of dug that. And I never thought to think that I wasn't allowed to do that, so I just did that stuff, and no one ever said no. you know, I saw the logos for the first Secret Warriors, and I was like, no, I don't like those. We should do something like this, you know, and that became the covers. And I didn't like how the first pass of the trades were, and I said we should do this. And I mean, it was a couple of, you know, I bumped my head against some stuff a couple of times, but you know, when you're my age and you have waited a really long time to do this stuff, it being mediocre is just not satisfying or acceptable. And so, and I push, I guess, when I need to push. But I haven't gotten any blowback or anything like that from them. Marvel's tolerant of my, I mean, it's in some ways it's unacceptable behavior because, you know, they have people doing their jobs and they're paid to do those jobs. But my heart's in the right place. How about that?
Now, along those lines, when I did the intro for the interview, I mentioned a lot of the stuff you've done for Marvel, and and Image, and I actually left stuff out. In the past 5 years since Nightly News, you've done a lot of books, and you're kind of known for being a really prolific guy. And one of the things we talked about with Chris Robertson last week was, you know, sort of juggling all the various titles. Like you did, you know, all the books for Image, that first wave of Nightly News, Transhuman, Red Mask for Mars, and now even at Marvel doing, you know, Secret Warriors and S.H.I.E.L.D. and FF. You've got another creator-owned title out called Red Wing. Mm-hmm. So how do you sort of juggle all that and just keep it such a constant stream coming? Because I know that you're a guy who advocates, you know, always doing something new.
Yeah, well, you don't want to get bored. Getting bored is pretty much death to anything. So I try and change things up a lot. You know, I'm done with Secret Warriors. I'll be done with S.H.I.E.L.D. here soon. You know, in the next 6 months, I would guess. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm going to stay on FF for a little while because I really enjoy that book. I planned on leaving on what would have been the anniversary in November, but I'm going to stay on after that. And that was unexpected. But, you know, I'm jumping ahead to do the Ultimates, and I'm doing the Ultimate Hawkeye stuff as well, and that looks and seems very exciting, and I've got a lot of cool plans there. But a lot of it is just the way my head works. You know, I kind of know where I'm going, and so it's really just kind of keeping the car on the road and staying up on the work and knowing where the end is helps a lot. As far as my indie work, and I guess part of that's just idea generation. But I mean, I think of new concepts all the time. I'm not just doing Red Wing and the other book that I'm writing and drawing Feel Better Now. I mean, I know what my next three creator-owned books will be, and that they're coming out right after those. So we're already, you know, plans are in place well into next year for like seven new things to have come out. So I think changing things up and keeping it different keeps you excited. And when you're excited, you have a high energy level. And you know, there's also the thing that I know that I'm not going to retire at Marvel. And I know that I've waited so long to do this that I don't have 25 years to put into this where I'm going to be relevant, especially as quickly as tastes change and all that. So the more you can switch things up, the more you can keep people interested and stay interested yourself.
It's kind of an interesting way of looking at it, especially since you know you said that you've waited a while to do this, and so you feel like you have a smaller window. Do you think that there's that there's an expiration date on your stories? Do you think there's going to come a time when your stuff's just not going to be good?
No, well, I think I have an expiration date in that I'm going to die.
I guess we all have that one.
Right. But I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I mean, but there will come a time, like, you know, it comes with everyone, that I'm not going to be a fresh new voice, and I'm not going to be a new thing, and I'm sure that I will slip into patterns of behavior and patterns of creation like every creator does. And I, you know, it's just people don't stay on top forever. And while I want to do this for the rest of my life, I know that I have to be really aggressive in the short term just so I can have a nice middle period. I mean, don't get me wrong. One day I will be an old man and therefore time will have passed me by. I mean, that happens for everyone, but that's not what I'm talking about, though. I'm not talking about not having a voice and not being relevant because you just can't appeal to people that buy stuff anymore. I mean, more along the lines of opportunities to be published. I mean, seriously, I mean, think of all your favorite creators from, you know, the 80s and 90s, and How many of those guys could just get a put deal tomorrow like that?
You know, yeah, I mean, that's a sort of self-awareness of an aspect of the industry that you don't often hear from a lot of creators.
I mean, it's because we have a culture of fandom where people are fans and they grow up being fans and they get into the industry. And a lot of guys that do this haven't had other jobs and haven't. Plenty have. Don't get me wrong. Plenty have, but a lot of them have not. And you don't have the perspective of corporate America and understanding that Marvel is a corporation and DC is a corporation and corporate cultures change. I mean, when the editor-in-chief becomes someone else or when an editor gets fired, they're going to bring in new people. I mean, that's just what happens. So, yeah, you got to be aware of that stuff.
Is that one of the reasons that you do, you know, even with, I guess what I would consider to be kind of a safe gig at Marvel doing FF, you know, you're still doing creator-owned stuff elsewhere. Is that sort of the motivation for that to just keep everything, you know, keep things moving and get as much of it out there as you can?
Well, I'm not going to retire at Marvel, and I'm never going to get a created by credit at Marvel. I mean, that's not going to happen. That doesn't happen anymore. So I'm thinking not only in the short term to creatively stay fresh, but I'm also hoping that one day I can sell some stuff or things become games or, you know, how media-wise everything is kind of integrated now. So obviously there's money out there to be had in other realms if you're an owner of things and not just a employee. So, you know, you have to keep that stuff in mind. Plus, I know what I make at Marvel, and I'm going to make what I make at Marvel, and that's the top end of it. I mean, not necessarily, but you get the point. I mean, you're not going to suddenly get rich because they make a Thor movie and you write the Thor comic, right?
Yes, I don't know that. There is a guy who does know that.
The answer to that is no, you're not. So,
well, sort of bringing up the idea of fans, you know, who have grown up as fans and have been steeped in the culture of comics and then become creators. You know, coming from something that has so little of traditional superheroics as nightly news, I remember when Transhuman came out. And for one thing, I was really surprised by how funny it was, because nightly news,
I'm not
I thought,
a funny guy.
Well, no, you're a very funny guy. I had not met you at the time. but nightly
because
news is
you're
so...
a humorless bastard, Jonathan. Cause you're a downer all the time. Go ahead.
These interviews are always going down south on me.
Yeah.
But no, like nightly news was so, you know, very deadly serious, and then Transhuman was. I think, you know, took a lot of people by surprise by being as funny as it was. And one of the things that was, you know, really, really funny to me as a, you know, complete superhero comic fan were the X-Men monkeys. The sort of,
sure.
You know, evolved monkey parodies of the X-Men. And that was sort of like my first indication that you were a guy who was, you know, not just one of the indie guys who did not like superhero comics. So did you, I mean, were you a fan growing up of Marvel stuff? Cause you've done in S.H.I.E.L.D. and in FF, you've done a lot of stuff that really draws upon a lot of the universe. Like I remember everybody loved that scene in S.H.I.E.L.D. number one in Egypt where you had Apocalypse and Khonshu. And you know, you've drawn on so much for FF, especially like with the Infinity Gauntlets and with, you know, Annihilus and all that. Were you, you know, was that stuff that you liked and had wanted to do since you were younger, or did it just kind of, you know, when you got to Marvel?
I mean,
you were like,
I grew up reading comics. I mean, I love comics. I mainstream comics, especially. I'm I had a ton of those. I got in trouble because I used to spend my money, all of my allowance on comics. And my father was positive that that was an end to nothing. And he's old and wrong. So there you go. I love mainstream books, and I'm not ashamed of that or anything. I tried to get into comics right out of college. I just failed and had spent 10 years doing horrible jobs. And I just think that's where I get my appreciation from. I've always wanted to do this stuff.
Was there anything, you know, when you were a kid that you thought up that now you've gotten the chance to sort of put in the books?
Well, the first comic that I was going to try and do and have published was that total wank fest. I made it up in high school and spent 15 years building a Bible about it and all that kind of stuff. The problem was is that it was horrible and derivative and like almost all of those projects are. You should burn those and be considered a sacrifice, you know. But I have stuff that I've had ideas about that's popped in the books, but most everything I'm doing isn't reflective of my Legion of Superhero stories or Teen Titans stories or X-Men stories or anything like that.
I would love to see you do a Legion of Superhero story.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that was my favorite book, and I think I would kill it, but I don't see myself over there anytime soon. And nor do I see the job coming open, considering that Levitz is writing again. And I don't know. I guess he's probably got the pull over there. So
yeah, probably just a little. One of the things that you have written that's probably my favorite thing that you have written in comics, which is really saying something because I like a lot of your stuff. But there's that issue of Fantastic Four where Reed goes to a sort of scientist symposium and just calmly berates everyone there for not thinking about the future, for dwelling too much on the past. And one of the things that I really liked about that scene was that, you know, you can read that from a lot of angles. You can read it as, you know, what it's printed on the page, as you know, a guy talking about sort of technology and science and the progression of discovery. But it's also very relevant to comics, which are notoriously rooted in the past and in people, you know, just, you know, telling the same stories that they were when they were kids. And I remember, you know, when I read it, I was like, oh man, Jonathan Hickman just put the rest of comics on notice. But I asked you about it, I think last year at HeroesCon, and you told me that that was sort of your motto when it comes to writing.
Well, yeah, it's the Rosetta Stone for understanding what I'm doing with the Fantastic Four, that issue. It's the mission statement for what the book is about, why what's going on in the book is going on, and what's going to happen when we get to a certain point, and what the book is going to be about going forward. Yeah, as well as kind of... Fantastic Four is and I tell everyone this, no secret, it is the most personal thing that I've written in that I'm actually in there. A lot of the stuff that I write, most everything that I write, sometimes glimpses of me come out in the books, but Fantastic Four is I'm all over the place there. Man, Franklin's lines, that shit my kid says, you know, it's just I'm all over the place in that book. So, sure. It's certainly commentary about not just the book, but the broader things as well.
Is there any one character who's the most you? Like, whose words are most often sort of your words?
I was like we talked about earlier, I was in Portland this weekend, And I was sitting there talking to Bendis, and he was telling me that, you know, other writers know that eventually, at some point, one character takes on the voice of the author in the book more than any other. And he was talking to some other guys about my FF, and for a while they were pretty sure that it was Reed, that's my voice in the book, and then they realized that it was actually Val, and that the book is like 50 times more entertaining when you realize that. And I told him he's kind of right. The kids are really me in the book, and more me, and me kind of... I guess in an oracular nature, yeah, they're kind of who I'm speaking through or inhabiting, I guess. So, but it's kind of true. So.
Now, what people might not know about you if they've never, you know, seen you at a convention, is that you actually are a giant orange rock monster. Which is...
You know, we said that we weren't going to do penis talk on this thing.
So. You talked about the kids.
About that.
You talked about the kids, about Franklin and Val, and you've got Nathaniel Richards in the book as well. And one of the, you know, if you're going to sum up Fantastic Four for somebody, kind of the log line of the book is that they're a family of superheroes. But you've really expanded that. You know, it's not just Reed, Sue, Ben, and Johnny in the book, or Reed, Sue, Ben, and Spider-Man now. But, you know, you do have Reed's father in there. You do have Reed and Sue's kids taking a very active role. And you've got this kind of, you know, Alex Power is in there from the Power Pack, who I like to see coming back. So you've got this, you know, very much an extended family that you've sort of built and made a much bigger ensemble cast than had existed in that book before. Was that, you know, sort of an attempt to live up to that? To that concept as the family of superheroes?
Well, I think everybody that starts off writing the Fantastic Four understands that it's not a supergroup, it's a family. And it's not a punch-em-up fest thing. It's really kind of challengers of the unknown kind of adventurers, you know, if you're getting it right. But then... I went back and read interviews with people that were going to take over the book and stuff like that. And everybody says the same thing. Everybody says that. But I actually didn't grow up reading the FF. I've told you this before. So I read everything at once. It is a lot of comics, but it's really interesting because... You know, reading that much of the same thing, and new writers come on, new art teams come on, and they all try and reinvent the franchise, and they all start at the same place. And you know, Johnny's a prankster at the beginning, and then he's serious at the end, and then a new guy comes on, and then he's a prankster again, and he gets serious over the arc, and or Ben's really, really down, and he has his redemption arc, and you very quickly figure out what works and what doesn't work, you know. A lot of people talk about it being a family book, but then it very quickly descends into not being that, and that was one of the conscious things that I really tried to do, was make it that even more so. And so you have all these parallels of Reed and his father, and Reed a father to his son, and the wizard is a father to his son, but he's a poor father. And, you know, all of that stuff is in there. And failed mothers and good mothers. And it's, you know, it's a pretty conscious effort to hammer that stuff in there.
I think one of the things that really underlined it was in the last couple issues, in 2 and 3, the way that Valeria refers to Dr. Doom as Uncle Doom. Which,
yeah, sure.
I kind of want that to be his actual name now.
Yeah, yeah.
Uncle Doom. I love that.
While we're on the topic of Dr. Doom, who is possibly my favorite comics character ever, I find it interesting that your Dr. Doom, Jonathan, is sort of subdued and yet... almost all the more sinister for that. Usually, writers try to make Doom just bigger and bigger and more bombastic and have more fire behind him. And you sort of made him quieter and more sinister. And I mean, part of that is the situation with his... Oh, now somebody else is being murdered.
Sorry. Had to commit a murder there for a second.
But anyway, part of that is based on the fact that his brain damage makes him that way. But I'm sort of interested in how you came to creating that sort of subdued, sinister Doom compared to how Doom is so often characterized.
Well, Bwahaha Doom is bullshit and should never... That people shouldn't do that. in my opinion, about that. I don't think Doom should ever be portrayed as anything other than noble. He just doesn't have the code that we have, and he's a bad guy, no doubt about it, but... Doom would never stoop to do anything. I mean, that's not the character. I mean, he doesn't. He may be clever and he may be maybe tricky, but he's not sneaky. I mean, that's not the character. So, and then of course there is when I took over the book, I was asked, "Are you cool with Doom becoming brain damaged in another book?" And I was like, of course, that makes for an interesting dynamic, and it's a cool way to bring Christoph back into the book, which is, again, another father-son parallel for those playing at home. I also have the benefit of knowing where Doom is headed and where he's going to end up. And, I'm pretty happy with how I'm writing him right now. He's every artist loves to draw him, and every writer loves to write him. He's an awesome character. One of our very best villains, one of our very best characters at Marvel.
Reading through everything at once in Fantastic Four, you know, the 600 comics that you read in preparation for this, was there any particular portrayal of Doom that sort of stuck out as right, or any particular one that sort of stuck out as wrong?
I don't want to say who got it wrong. That would be really
fair enough.
But you can ask me at the bar in a couple of weeks. I'll tell you who really fucked it up. and if you haven't had the chance, if you're listening at home and you haven't had the chance to go to Heroes Con, it's one of the best shows in the country and certainly the Southeast best show, I think. And we'll be there drinking. Who's done Doom really well? Lots of people. Lots of people have done Doom well. Brubaker did him well in his Books of Doom thing.
That is a really underrated book.
Yeah. Let's see, who else was solid? I think Stanley and Jack Kirby had a decent chip there. not to be underestimated, I would say. Or undervalued. I can't even say that with a straight face, I'm sorry. Who else was really good? I don't know. Plenty of people. It's too. Burns to Doom wasn't too shitty, was it? I could go on.
I'm actually like the only guy who doesn't like Burns Fantastic Four, and I still love all the Doctor Doom issues.
Yeah, sure. It's
fantastic.
Yeah, I can understand why. I don't think Burns stuff has aged quite as well as. Probably people remember, you know, because we think about it nostalgic. Most people think about it nostalgically, you know, when they read it when they were a kid. And there's a lot of awesome stuff in those runs, certainly. But it's definitely not. I would not rank it number two if I was ranking my favorite FF run.
We'll get that ranking at Heroes Con.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. I mean, it's up there, no doubt. It's up there, no doubt about it. But it would not be my number two.
Jonathan, you mentioned the whole thing with the brain damage happening in another book and incorporating that into your FF. I'm sure another thing that you had to do, since Spider-Man is part of the FF team, and there has basically at least been one concurrent FF story in Amazing Spider-Man. I'm sure you and Dan Slott have had to compare notes at least some on what each of you are doing in the specific books.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like Dan. I think Dan's doing a good job on Spider-Man, certainly. Yeah, I mean, we keep up with each other. We talk on the phone. We see each other when we're in New York. And, well, when I'm in New York, he obviously lives there. But, yeah, and that stuff actually is going to... The stuff now is interesting because it's a new paradigm. What's coming down the road with the whole... you know, in between the Spider-Man and the FF books is going to be way more interesting. So if you like that stuff, there's going to be a lot more of it. If you hate it, you're screwed.
About Spider-Man, was there like a separate decision? I guess what I'm asking is, did the decision to add Spider-Man to the team just follow logically as a consequence of killing off Johnny, or did you kill off Johnny because you wanted to add Spider-Man to the team?
No, Spider-Man came in later and was not part of my initial pitch document, whereas I turned in a 3-year document, and a 2.5-year, I guess, document, but... And Johnny Storm dying was always in there. Spider-Man taking his place or joining the team when that happened was something that came about later on. When it was decided that Dan was going to be the solo Spider-Man creator, because I don't know if everybody remembers or not, but they were doing 3 issues a month, and they had groups of 4 writers who would switch on and off to write Spider-Man, and obviously it wasn't on the table at that point in time, but that came up later, and it's natural and organic, as the books have always been kind of intertwined. I think it's probably one of the places that Spider-Man should really be at home. I know people worry about him being in so many books, but the Fantastic Four is, there's always been a tie between those 2 books, so it's kind of natural. And I was cool with it, and it leads to more, way more interesting things. And I had been seeding Spider-Man showing up in the book, I mean, from the beginning of my run, especially the Franklin's birthday party stuff, which was my 4th or 5th issue on the book. So, you know, it's been, the seeds have been there, but him full on joining the team was a later decision.
One of the things that I think a lot of people forget about Spider-Man, both, you know, readers and occasionally creators, is that he's a really, really smart guy, and Reed Richards is his hero.
Yeah.
And I like, especially, there's that scene in FF number 3 where, you know, he goes into the room with all the genius kids, and is suddenly really smart. Like, the only one who's expecting him to be smart was Reed. And I really like that, because I like that Spider-Man is the smartest superhero in the Marvel universe, which is full of smart superheroes. So
well, he's not out of place, you know.
Yeah.
I also think it was done well in the with the Spider-Man, Iron Man, Civil War stuff too. It was noted in that. But yeah, Peter Parker's smart. I mean, it shouldn't. I think Dan's writing them that way as well, so I think it works.
Yeah, especially in, you know, giving him, you know, the job at a think tank and the genius girlfriend. I like that that's something that's become a prominent element of Spider-Man again.
The whole with great power comes great responsibility, while being a timeless, eternal theme. Sometimes people write Spider-Man as an everyman because of that. Yeah, I always said, well, that was kind of a mistake. So it's great. It's great that he's being written that way right now.
Is it different than you expected to write that character? I know you mentioned that he's been really fun for you in interviews before.
Well, he actually, not until issue 4 and 5 does he really start to shine, and then he really, really takes off after that.
So it's been progressively putting more of him. Like, I hate when the book is the FF. It's a Fantastic Four book. So Spider-Man shouldn't come in and be the prominent member right off the bat. That would be stupid, in my opinion. So his role grows as his time with the team grows, and so he gets progressively more fun every month, actually.
Awesome. Well, Matt, that's about all I've got.
All right. Well, then we ought to ask a question from the hat. Jonathan, I don't know if you've heard this part of the show before, but basically I have a top hat. It is full of questions that either I wrote or that people sent to me on Twitter. They are directed at no one in particular, but I just draw a question out of the hat and ask our guest the question for him or her to answer however they see fit. So here's the question out of the hat for you to answer however you would like. It is from our good friend, Aaron, of Evian Aaron, from Awesomed by Comics. And his question is, what the fuck?
I hope the rapture actually happens on Saturday so I can follow the fallout on Twitter.
I don't think anybody
as one of those destined to be left behind. I hope my internet connection holds up.
This episode is going up on Monday, so everybody will know whether or not the rapture actually happened.
You can say whatever you want on the show. No holy people are going to hear it.
Yeah, well, and what the fuck with the delay on putting the issue up? How about that? The episode up. There you go. Thematically tied it back up. You guys should stop being lazy and get on it. So.
Fair enough. Ouch.
Yeah. Well, what the hell else do you have to do? I mean, come on.
Well, at least Matt has a regular job. Like, I have no excuse, but Matt at least has a real job.
Hey, how do you like doing the Comics Alliance stuff?
Oh, I love it.
It seems pretty solid, man. I think you guys do a great job over there.
Oh, thank you. We do our best. than which no man can do more, I guess, as P.G. Woodhouse put it.
Are you guys all going to San Diego again?
I believe so. I don't think we've gotten it confirmed, but we were nominated for an Eisner again, as I may have mentioned several hundred times on this show. So presumably we'll all be on hand to either hopefully accept or otherwise drink. So,
all right, well, there you go.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll see you there, and I'll definitely see you at Heroes Con.
Yeah, I'll be at both of those shows, and so we'll definitely drink some beer and whatnot. Are you at the Westin for Heroes Con?
Yes, I am.
All right, well, there you go. That's where for those listening at home, the Westin is where all the hookers are.
So. And I'm one of them this year. I drew the short straw.
Oh, okay. Well, Chris will be the guy not making money, turning tricks at the show.
Hey, I've been working out. Come on, man.
All right.
And with that, I think it's time we turn it over to our friends on Twitter for some questions from our listeners for you, Jonathan Hickman.
Oh, okay. All right, shit, I didn't know we were doing that. Okay. I saved that joke up. That was my best joke of the night. We're going to end poorly then. All right, go ahead.
First question comes from Ian X on Twitter. He would like to know if you could redesign any superhero logo, which one and how?
Oh, I can't give you the answer to this that I want to because it's actually I'll get in trouble. So I guess I should say a DC logo. I wish the Legion would go back to the big Interlac L logo. And not do something funky with that, obviously. So.
Next question comes from The Sickness 83.
The Interlac L. it's pathetic. All right, go ahead.
The Cygnus 83 says that he heard you do a lot of plotting and outlining in notebooks, which I know a lot of guys do. He wants to know if you have considered going digital for your notes and planning, and if you have, what do you use?
I think the notebooks get a little bit too much play because people have just seen physical copies of or a physical version of that at the retreats when I pull those out, you know, that I've scribbled stuff down in. My computer is set up the same way. I mean, my laptop is full of Illustrator files with diagrams in them, and I use a lot of note carding programs, and my file structure is elaborate. So there you go.
Next question comes from Coltreg on Twitter, who would like to know, besides S.H.I.E.L.D., what is your favorite organization in any comic universe?
The Legion, I guess, yeah. I don't know who else is cooler than the Legion.
They're teenagers from the future.
Yeah, the Legion's cooler than S.H.I.E.L.D., man. So S.H.I.E.L.D.'s awesome, but not as cool as the Legion, so...
Next question comes from Crack-a-Doom, who would like to know, Mr. Hickman, what are your nefarious plans to defeat your arch nemesis?
I don't think I have an arch nemesis. If I did, I assume he would be a worthy opponent, and therefore, I don't know, my kid would die at some point in the story, and so I would have to come up with, you know, I'd be faced with revenge or losing and losing my humanity or forgiving him, and I do not have to fucking kill him anyway and become an anti-hero, right? He killed my kid. How can I not avenge him? So,
well, I hope that never comes up then.
Well, shit, it's the imaginary, right? I mean, I don't think I have real enemies. Well, what have I done to gain an enemy? Fuck you, man. Come on.
I think that is what you did to gain
there
an enemy.
There you go. You're my enemy, and you're on fucking internet ass.
Sora Nomaru would like to know, were there any historical figures initially planned to appear in S.H.I.E.L.D. that had to be removed?
You mean for, like, rights, I guess, and stuff like that? People that we couldn't use because of... No, nothing like that. There are people that got cut because of space. The Russian polymath that discovered that postulated the existence of Antarctica before it was ever seen by human eyes, that was going to be the guy that first discovered the Savage Land. We had to cut that. Other cool stuff like that.
Nice.
It'll be in the deluxe omnibus.
Nicole Hay would like to know, which soccer teams do each member of the FF support? You being a noted soccer fan.
Right, right. They all support the men's national team. They're all good, loyal Americans. They don't have time for club football. They're busy saving the universes.
All right, and our final question from friend of the show, Matt Fraction. He has a question and a follow-up.
Of course he does. Of course he does. That's a man that won't. He can't limit it to one question. Go ahead.
His first question is, why did you steal Ed Brubaker's Windbreaker?
I did not. The thing that pisses me off about this is it's funny, but why am I in that room of assholes, the one that the guy that everybody thinks immediately stole the jacket?
Was Ed Brubaker's jacket actually stolen?
I have no idea. I did not steal the jacket. Whatever incredible plan that Matt came up with to steal Ed's jacket and then throw the blame on me, bravo, Matt Fraction. But no, it wasn't me. I don't have the jacket.
All right. And his follow-up is, why did Doom's invitation in FF number 3 have a split infinitive?
Because I need a better editor. About that.
All right.
Because No, I'm sorry. That's not the correct answer to that question. That was the alternate answer. The correct answer is because I'm not as good of a writer as Matt Fraction is the proper answer.
I'm sure that we can
you're scoring at home, Matthew.
Matt should definitely put that as a quote on his next trade. I am not as good a writer as Matt Fraction, Jonathan Hickman writer, Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I would let him do that. Matt's definitely one of my favorite writers. Dude, I got to see all the art and actually the entirety of the first issue of the new Casanova. It's amazing.
Yeah, I have no trouble believing that.
Amazing. He's a very talented dude who has a stolen jacket, apparently.
And with that, I think we are done here. Jonathan, thank you for coming on the show. Before we let you go, is there anything that you would like to plug that we have not already discussed?
No, I think we've talked about everything. I would like to remind people to please support Red Wing. It's a really, really cool book about time travel and dogfighting through time and the way that we lost our past and whatnot. It's a really interesting indie book, and please check that out.
All right. Our guest has been Mr. Jonathan Hickman. You can meet him and shake his hand if he will let you at Heroes Con coming up in the first weekend of June in Charlotte, North Carolina. But right now, you can go to the store and pick up FF. Secret Warriors is available in hardcover and trade paperback, and S.H.I.E.L.D. is also coming out, as well as his titles for Image, like Nightly News, Transhuman, and Red Mass for Mars. Jonathan, seriously, thank you so much for coming along. You're one of my favorite guys in comics to talk to. It's always a pleasure.
Sure, anytime, man.
One more time, I want to thank Jonathan Hickman for coming on to the show. He is a guy that we have been wanting to have on since we started the show. And it was definitely a treat to get him. If you ever get a chance to talk to him at a convention, one of the smartest and funniest guys that you will meet. Now, Matt, I think you have a listener question for us.
Yes, we have a listener question. This is from listener Stephen Matthews, who starts his email to us with, in all caps, "Everything we know is wrong." And he wants to ask us, what is the new origin of a darker, more flawed Chris and Matt?
Could there be a more flawed Chris and Matt? Who still managed to do a show every week?
I that is a good question. But it seems as though Steven wants to anti-heroize us and make us sort of 90s style dark.
I think what would happen. I think what would happen is that we would be like. Do you know like Ghost Rider and Blaze? Remember that comic?
Yep.
Yeah.
For anyone not familiar with it, when Johnny Blaze stopped being Ghost Rider, and Danny Ketch started being Ghost Rider, like they hung out together sometimes, and Johnny Blaze grew his hair long and put on like ridiculous Eazy-E sunglasses and had a shotgun that shot Hellfire. So they were like still both basically Ghost Rider, but just one guy wasn't a skeleton. Matt, you would be Dan Ketch, obviously. You're thinner than I am. More likely to be a skeleton. Although I do not have any Eazy-E sunglasses and just got a haircut, so maybe that doesn't work. But yeah, I think we would sort of motorcycle around the Southwest, maybe interviewing people, since that's what we do
on our motorcycles.
Recommending comics.
So when we record it, it will be totally inaudible because all you will hear are motorcycle engines.
Much like those comics were totally unreadable.
Luke, do you have any ideas for how you might have a darker origin?
Probably somehow from an alternate future where you guys have destroyed the entire world with your vigilante demonic interviewing styles, and I have come back from the future ravaged by time and by the horrors that you've presented me with
the
a vengeance.
Horrors that we've presented you?
Yeah. Horrors, okay. Not horrors. Oh, okay. I mean, yeah.
Just checking.
So you would come back to get your ultimate revenge against us.
Maybe you would have to get beaten to death by a crowbar, and then I would like be really kind of solitary and reclusive, which would fit because I don't know how to do any editing on the podcast and would never put it up. And then Matt, you would realize like, no, Chris has gone over the edge. He needs to have someone do all this work for him. And then Huge, of course, would come back. I don't want Huge to die from getting beaten by a crowbar.
I'd never be that nice.
you would leave me to rot.
Okay, well, there's your dark origin, Stephen, so I hope you're happy with it. Luke,
depressing question, jerk.
Luke, I hope you have had a fun time as third chair on the show this week. Anything that you would like to plug as we wrap things up?
I do a weekly webcomic at socialfist.com, and that's about communist superheroes trying to fight a imperialist American superhero squad, and so if you like that sort of thing, check it out. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Coltreg, which is K-O-L-T-R-E-G. And I usually post links to the other stuff that I end up doing over there.
And you are a frequent question asker on War Rocket Ajax. I think we have one from you during the interview.
I'm aiming for the highly coveted title.
Ah, yes. Power Listener.
Yes.
All right, Chris. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, people can find me on the internet everywhere. Everywhere you look, there I am. But mostly, if you're looking at the-isb.com, which is my home page on the web internet, where you can find links to a lot of the things I write. You can also find me daily at comicsalliance.com, the number one website for your comics news, opinions, and other assorted hilarity. Small Villains is over, but for the next 4 weeks, starting today, when you hear this, David Uzumeri and I will be watching the four Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher Batman movies until we start our next project, because we like working together and we like having something that's ready to go up on Monday. So enjoy that. Enjoy remedial Batmanology is what we're calling that. I wanted to call it Batman versus Nature. But remedial Batmanology was David's suggestion. So please check those out at comicsalliance.com. You can also find my webcomic at awesomehospital.com, and you can find my Tumblr at 20%cooler.tumblr.com. And you can also find me in live and in person. Check the dates on the-isb.com, but definitely I will be at Heroes Con 2011 from June 3rd to 5th at the Charlotte Convention Center. I will be there with Chad Bowers, my co-writer, and Matt Diggs, the artist of Awesome Hospital, as well as Josh Kroc, the letterer of Awesome Hospital. He will be in attendance. Matt will be in attendance for a short time. Huge will be in attendance. Let's Be Friends Again will be in attendance. Kevin Church will be in attendance. It is going to be an awesome 4-day party because we get there on Thursday, and we will be rocking into the night. So please come out and see us if you are in the area or would like to attend probably the best comic book convention in America. Matt, where can everybody find you?
I'm on Twitter at HighMindedMW. I also run a satirical Twitter account called Fake E-Etiquette. It's on Twitter at Fake E-Etiquette. It's got three E's all together right in the middle. Also, I run the Content Farm, which has not been updating too much lately. I'm trying to get back on that train pretty soon. I would also invite you to follow Huge, who did our theme song and is a former co-host of this show. He's on Twitter at Huge Warrock. Also, our former poster artist, Max Huffman. He's on Twitter at Max Huffman.
He's grounded again.
And he's grounded again, just like Superman. And also follow another member of the Ajax crew, Rusty Shackles. He's at Rusty_Shackles. And even though we haven't mentioned it so far this episode, this has been the appropriately numbered War Rocket Ajax number 69.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what that means.
Yeah.
I want every second of that long, uncomfortable silence to make it into the end of the show. Matt is right. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 69. You can find out more about the show at warrocketajax.com. Email us listener questions at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. And leave us iTunes reviews to help people find the show and realize that two guys talking about comics every week is actually somewhat entertaining most of the time, I hope. Big changes coming up for the show. We do not know who is going to be on our next show, but we do know that there are some big changes in the works, so stay tuned to War Rocket Ajax. We will be back next week with more excitement. Guys, it has been a pleasure.
Yep.
Yep.
And I'm getting tired of saying Ajax out. So if you have an idea for a new closing catchphrase for War Rocket Ajax, send it to me. WarRocketPodcast@gmail.com. But for now, Ajax gone.
Yeah!
Matt, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry.
It's okay. I just wanted to make sure you weren't being murdered.
That was how he's dragging the body away.
I mean, this would be the perfect alibi to commit. Sorry, officer, I didn't commit that murder. I was recording my podcast at the time.